It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
U.S. Peace Corps volunteers pulled out of West Africa amid the Ebola outbreak. Libyan Islamist militia gained victory in eastern city of Benghazi. I'm Victor Beatty, reporting from Washington. Two U.S. Peace Corps volunteers in Liberia have been isolated after potential exposure to Ebola, although neither one is showing symptoms of the deadly virus. The Peace Corps is removing all its volunteers from Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea. Two other American healthcare workers in Liberia have become infected. Samaritan's Purse spokesman Ken Isaac says Dr. Kent Brantley continues to fight for survival.
He is in a very serious condition. He is stable. Ebola takes 10 to 14 days to run its course. The mortality rate for people with Ebola is 57% in Liberia. We pray that he will survive. We are giving him around-the-clock medical treatment, and we're doing all that we can for him.
American missionary nurse Nancy Ritbold is also under treatment. Liberia has ordered the closure of schools and placed non-essential government workers on leave. Togo's prime minister presided over the opening of an Ebola clinic in Lomé. The WHO says nearly 700 people have died from Ebola in three West African countries. After days of fighting, Islamist groups in Libya seized the headquarters of the special forces in the eastern city of Benghazi. Some 60 people have died since violence erupted on Saturday. Meanwhile, Tripoli's airport remains closed after 2 weeks of fighting. Authorities say a fire continues to burn near the airport after a rocket struck a fuel tank and the fire spread. Clashes for control for the airport have raged since mid-July. Dozens have died. Guinean President Alpha Conde has declared a week of mourning after a stampede at a concert left at least 33 dead. The incident occurred late Tuesday on a beach in Conakry, where thousands gathered for the concert to celebrate the end of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. Agricultural experts say small-scale farmers in Africa can play a greater role in ending food insecurity. They currently produce an estimated 80% of the continent's food each year, but most lack the ability to sell their produce in commercial markets. Here's reporter Jennifer Lazuda.
Sub-Saharan African countries continue to import more food each year than they export. An estimated 60% of the world's uncultivated farmable land is in Africa, but many people still don't have enough to eat. Experts say that small-scale farmers could be the key to reducing this food insecurity, as well as stimulating economic growth and reducing poverty and unemployment. Adebayo Olukoshi, the director of the UN's African Institute for Economic Development and Planning, says small-scale farmers can play an important role in a country's agricultural development.
The smallholder continues to be a key player on the African continent. They constitute the bedrock of the agricultural farming population.
Olukoshi said that not only would more productive smallholders give Africa the potential to feed itself, they could also help African countries serve as a food basket for the rest of the world. Experts say that giving small-scale farmers access to credit or microloans could help them increase their output. Crop insurance might encourage smallholders to scale up their production. Better agricultural infrastructure, such as storage facilities, irrigation systems, and road systems, as well as better access to market information, is also needed. Jennifer Lazuda for VOA News, Dakar.
As the White House prepares to host the first ever U.S.-Africa summit next week, National Security Advisor Susan Rice Wednesday called it an opportunity to improve ties.
We've got to keep working for progress, shaping change in the right direction. And that's what the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit is all about, an opportunity to recommit to ending extreme poverty and reaching the day when families don't worry about where their next meal is coming from. It's a chance to boost ties of trade and investment, even as we ensure that the benefits are more broadly shared.
Some 50 African heads of state are to take part in the three-day summit. Four Ethiopian athletes who disappeared after competing in a track meet in the northwest U.S. state of Oregon last week have been found safe. They were taking part in the International Association of Athletics Federation Championship. The U.S. Air Force Chief of Staff said Wednesday asphyxiation was the cause of death for a stowaway who somehow got on board a C-130 aircraft in Mali. The teen's identity is still a mystery. The plane made several stops in Africa before the body was discovered after the plane landed in Germany. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 31st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia announces additional measures in the fight against Ebola.
Our goal is to care for the afflicted, protect healthcare workers, and ensure that we achieve a no new case situation in our country.
That's Liberian Information Minister Louise Brown. A U.S. congressman asked the Obama administration to impose a travel ban on citizens of Ebola-affected West African countries. U.S. First Lady Michelle Obama calls on young Africans to embrace women's rights. And a former Nigerian vice president is unhappy with the prevailing security situation in his country.
The security situation in the country, I must admit, Peter, is appalling. I have never seen it this bad, not even during the Civil War. We have this sense of insecurity all over the country.
Atiku Abubakar is Nigeria's former vice president. A new negotiator is named to tackle Libya's ongoing violence, and media advocates seek greater freedoms in southern Africa. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has announced a national action plan in the country's fight against the Ebola epidemic. This comes as two U.S. Peace Corps volunteers have been isolated in Liberia after suspected exposure to the virus. In a nationwide speech Wednesday, Mrs. Sirleaf said she will not attend next week's U.S.-Africa summit. Instead, she said the Liberian delegation will be led by Vice President Joseph Boakai. The president also ordered the closure of all schools pending further directive from the Ministry of Education. She also announced the closure of all markets along Liberia's borders with Sierra Leone and Guinea. Information Minister Louise Brown tells me Liberia's goal is to contain the epidemic.
Without exception, we have determined our strategy in fighting this deadly virus, which is becoming widespread, to be one of containment. Our goal is to care for the afflicted, protect healthcare workers, and ensure that we achieve a no new case situation in our country.
The government also is saying that certain communities are being quarantined. What are the communities that are being quarantined and why?
We are looking at areas where the incidence is high, the risk of spread is also high. And so we want to quarantine those areas and provide the needed food and medical support in those communities to reduce the risk of movement of people by which this disease is now confirmed is being spread. When the president talks about marketplaces, she's talking about border areas, including Foya, Bow Waterfly, and others that hold traditional market days where people come from either side to congregate in one place and to sell their wares. These have been known to also further the risk of spread.
Let me say, Mr. Minister, I read a local media report criticizing the government or the Ministry of Health as not being prepared for this, the number of deaths from this Ebola virus. One report says that there are even dead bodies around the city or around in Liberia that are not being picked up.
First of all, experts have confirmed that this outbreak and the rapidity of the spread, including to populated centers like Monrovia and parts of Lofa, is unprecedented. This has never happened, and therefore, certainly no government could have been prepared to deal with the sheer size of the problem. That is why we are making an international appeal for assistance.
What does your government need at this moment?
Well, we need everything. We need PPE, that's the personal protection equipment. We need gloves. We need medical supplies. We need experts. This is a rare disease. There are very few experts. But we need clinicians. We need sanitation experts. We need healthcare workers.
If the president is not coming, is Liberia sending any delegation to the U.S.-Africa summit?
Absolutely. We consider that summit extremely important, not just for Liberia, but for the continent and our continued excellent relationship between the United States and ourselves. And so the vice president will lead a small delegation of ministers whose presence will be absolutely necessary.
Liberia's Information Minister Louis Brown was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. A U.S. congressman has asked the Obama administration to impose an immediate travel ban on the citizens of Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, and any foreigner who has visited one of those countries. In a letter to Secretary of State John Kerry, Congressman Alan Grayson of Florida and a member of the House of Representatives Committee on Foreign Affairs says the restriction should be lifted only when 90 days have passed without a newly reported case. He said the ban should be expanded to any other nation that reports originating a case of Ebola. Congressman Grayson tells me the Ebola virus presents an enhanced danger to the American public.
The countries represent a danger at this point to the rest of the world, and because the best way to deal with the situation is to isolate the areas that are affected until hopefully the infection burns itself out as it has in the past. We are talking about this time a fundamentally different circumstance, however. This is the largest outbreak in history. It's the most widespread outbreak in history. It's the deadliest outbreak in history. Already, the government of Liberia has taken steps to close its own borders. We're assisting in that effort by saying that these areas should remain isolated until the infection has been broken.
Diplomats excluded from this travel ban because, as you probably know, next week the U.S.-Africa summit is going to be held here in Washington when President Barack Obama will host about 50 African leaders.
We haven't excluded anyone, and in fact, we've included people who have been traveling through those countries in the past 90 days. The scientific evidence is that people who contract Ebola disease can remain in a position where they can infect others for at least 60 days, so a 90-day period seems to be prudent.
Does this include, or would this include, Nigeria?
Well, under the definition set forth in my letter, not yet, because the only case that we've seen so far in Nigeria was a case that originated in Liberia. So there haven't been, as yet, any cases that originated in Nigeria or anywhere other than the three countries that I named in the letter, Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia. So at this point, the answer to your question is no.
I don't know if you have heard, Congressman, the Peace Corps is recalling its volunteers from these three countries. Will those returning volunteers be affected by this proposed travel ban, or they are just welcome home?
Well, if they're Americans, then we're expecting that when they return, they take prudent measures. There are ways that can be employed to try to identify people who have been infected, and I would hope that they would voluntarily and enthusiastically submit themselves to those tests so that we can make sure that if they are returning, they're not returning with disease. But the travel ban only applies to foreign visitors to the United States, not Americans who are returning. Maybe over time we'll have to consider that further. But right now, since there are ways to detect, and the ways to detect can be employed at our borders, then it is reasonable for us to assume that Americans would be unwilling to put others at risk and therefore would get themselves tested.
Congressman Alan Grayson of Florida is a member of the U.S. House of Representatives Committee on Foreign Affairs. He spoke with me in Washington, D.C. Former Nigerian Vice President Atiku Abubakar says the current security situation in the country is appalling. He also accused the Goodluck Jonathan government of lacking the political will to address the violence which is being carried out by the Islamist militant group Boko Haram. Abubakar tells reporter Peter Clotty that the growing insecurity has undermined the country's economy and negatively impacted Nigeria's reputation in the international community.
The security situation in the country, I must admit, Peter, is appalling. I have never seen it this bad, not even during the civil war, did we have this sense of insecurity all over the country. During the civil war, we had insecurity restricted only to the theater of the civil war. But in this case, we have insecurity, all over, whether it is, the terrorists in the northeast, or whether it is the kidnappings in the southeast, or whether it is oil theft in the Niger Delta, or whether it is robbery in the southwest. So it's pervasive, and it's quite appalling.
So what would you think is the best solution to resolve this problem?
I agree with you. Of course, a number of factors are responsible, but I think what we need to have in place is a political leader that has the will and the courage and the determination
to restore law and order. And restoring law and order is a multifaceted approach, both social, economic, and as well as security-wise. So you must have a political leadership that has the vision, the will, and the courage, you know, to pursue those multifaceted approach.
So I heard you are a significant political player in the main opposition, APC. What is your involvement?
It is not my first time of getting involved into the opposition political movement. I mean, in the first, you know, foray was in the year 2006 when from the Action Congress, I mean, which later became ACN. And of course, therefore, all what I was trying to do is to make sure that we provided Nigerians, you know, an alternative opposition. This is because I'm a firm believer in a two-party system. A two-party system will provide Nigerians alternative from time to time. A single major or powerful political party will result into a one-party system and will ultimately land us in the hands of a dictator.
Atiku Abubakar is Nigeria's former vice president. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 31st. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. U.S. First Lady Michelle Obama has urged some of Africa's best and brightest to advocate for women's rights in their home countries. As VOA's Pam Dawkins explains, Obama spoke to some 500 participants of the Young African Leaders Initiative, a six-week U.S.-based training and development program.
In a Washington speech, First Lady Michelle Obama made it clear that the issue of women's rights involves men as well.
So to all the men, my brothers here today, I have a simple message. A simple message. We need you to shake things up.
She said women will play a crucial role in Africa's economic future.
This is where Africa's future lies. With those women-run businesses, with those girls attending university, and with leaders like you who are making those dreams possible.
Participants said they liked what the First Lady had to say.
Every society is measured by the way they treat their women. And I feel so inspired by that. And this is a message I'm taking back home to my people, because where we come from, women don't get a lot of respect. They don't get what they deserve.
I was inspired most by the message concerning the support that we get from the men behind us.
Michelle Obama's remarks were a highlight of a Washington summit that also included a speech by President Barack Obama. The participants, who were selected from among 50,000 applicants, also attended U.S. universities and met with business leaders like Alexa Von Tobel, who encouraged them to think big.
Don't dream this big. Dream this big. Dream so big that people think you're insane.
The participants said they were inspired.
I believe when I get back home, I'll try to see how I can incorporate or bring in a lot of people to do the work together, because one head, so many heads are better than one.
Nothing is impossible, like he said. If you believe in yourself.
Thank you. God bless.
Most participants are heading home after the summit wraps up. A small group will remain in the U.S. for internships. Pam Dawkins, VOA News, Washington.
As Libya's rival factions fight in the country's two largest cities, the former head of Libya's interim transitional national congress, Mustafa Abdel Jalil, has been appointed to try to negotiate an end to the violence. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Warring militiamen paused Wednesday outside a burning oil depot near Tripoli, the capital, as fire trucks and other tankers brought water to help douse the blazing inferno. Libya's oil ministry urged private citizens to bring water to help those fighting the fire. Amid the country's on and off fighting between Islamist militiamen and rivals loyal to former Libyan Army Chief of Staff Khalifa Haftar, Libya's former interim head of of state, Mustafa Abdul Jalil, was given the job of negotiating between the factions. Abdul Jalil's task appears arduous, especially after the Islamist fighters expelled Libyan Army Special Forces commandos allied with Haftar from a base in Benghazi Tuesday. In a video, Ansar al-Sharia's commander in Benghazi, Muhammad Ali Zahawi, declared that the battle was not over. He says his forces are pausing to check out Benghazi after their great victory and will pursue their course until they succeed in expelling their opponents from the city. Middle East expert Paul Sullivan, who teaches at Georgetown University in Washington, tells VOA that Mustafa Abdul Jalil has a difficult task.
Asking someone to negotiate between these parties is like trying to walk into the middle of a multiple gang fight in the Bronx. You're probably not going to make much progress. It's an extremely fluid situation. Groups are changing sides. People within groups are changing sides even within a day.
Sullivan also says he believes that the fighting could last a long time due to the number of weapons and militias there.
There are a lot of weapons still in Libya. From the Gaddafi days, he went on a spending spree. No one's really sure how much is there. This whole thing also connects in with al-Qaeda and the Islamic Maghreb and all kinds of other groups floating about. It could take many years for this to actually play out to some kind of conclusion, and my concern is that conclusion will be unhappy for all.
Libya's new parliament, which was formed after a June vote, is due to meet August 4th to try to bring order to a country which appears to be rapidly spiraling out of control. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Media advocates who have been meeting in Zimbabwe's capital, Harare, ahead of next month's regional summit say Southern Africa lags behind other regions in allowing journalists to work without government harassment. As Sebastian Mofu reports, experts warn that reforms on paper are not translating into real media freedom.
In Southern Africa, media freedom is a rare commodity, especially in Swaziland and Zimbabwe. Zoe Titus is director of the Media Institute of Southern Africa, a regional organization that seeks to foster free, independent, and diverse media. She says the region is going backward in terms of legal rights.
In the last 3 years, the number of access to information laws enacted in Africa have increased from 5 to 14, but none of those pieces of legislation have been enacted in Southern Africa. On the opposite part, there have been a number of, I would think, more repressive laws or more serious threats against media freedom and freedom of expression that we have experienced in the last few years.
Indexes of international freedom routinely rank Zimbabwe, Malawi, and Swaziland in the bottom quarter of nations. Titus points to Zimbabwe, where it is an offense for a journalist to quote an official about cabinet meetings and where reports must be licensed by the government. She knows the monarch of Swaziland is known to actively prosecute journalists and criminalizes freedom of expression, citing the recent case against human rights lawyer Tulani Maseko and reporter Beki Makubu. The two were sentenced to 2 years in jail for writing an article critical of the government. A Swazi court determined the article amounted to, quote, interfering with the administration of justice. Of the 15 members of the Southern African Development Community, SADC, the majority of governments are ostensible democracies. Media advocates argue that one of the pillars of democracy is a free press, and MISA is calling on leaders who attend the SADC summit to commit to ensuring that journalists enjoy freedom of expression.
I would demand that they deliver the promises that they've made and they act on the positions that they have been afforded. The issue of the right to media freedom and freedom of expression is not a right bestowed on me or you as a citizen. We are entitled to that right. We're entitled to claim that right. And they, our heads of state, are inadequate in their positions and inadequate on delivering what they are supposed to provide to us.
Even countries with vibrant media landscapes, activists note a worrying trend towards replacing restrictions of journalists. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa. Suppose here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin at the British Commonwealth Games in Glasgow, Scotland. Purity Cherotich Kirui clocked 9 minutes and 30.96 seconds to lead Milka Chemos Chewa and Joan Chepkoemei in a 1-2-3 Kenyan medal podium sweep in women's 3,000-meter steeplechase on Wednesday. South African Wade Van Niekerk ran 44.68 seconds in 400 meters to claim the silver medal in men's 400 meters. On the infield, South African Zach Visser and Rashwal Samai bagged the silver and bronze medals with leaps of 8.12 meters and 8.08 meters in men's long jump, respectively. While Sunet Fulyun, also of South Africa, earned a silver medal in javelin with a throw of 63.17 meters. Elsewhere in women's weightlifting, Nigerian Mariam Usman clinched the gold medal in the 75-plus kilogram category with a lift of 280 kilograms, while in women's wrestling, Odunayo Adekuoreye and Aminat Adiniyi each bagged a gold medal for Nigeria. Staying in Glasgow, South Africa are seventh on the medal table with 9 gold, 10 silver and 12 bronze medals. Nigeria is 8th, Kenya is 9th, Cameroon 15th, Mozambique 23rd, Namibia 28th, while Ghana, Mauritius, Uganda and Zambia share the 29th spot with a bronze medal each out of 34 nations and territories on the medal table. Finally, Tunisia is to present their bid to host the 2021 Mediterranean Games to the International Committee of Mediterranean Games in Athens, Greece, today, Thursday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Our listener mail for this Thursday morning comes from Mohammed Ahmed Masur of Monrovia, Liberia. He says, dear VOA, the death of Dr. Brisbane, the senior doctor at the government hospital in Monrovia, is a wake-up call for the Liberian government to institute a community sensitization campaign about the deadly Ebola virus. I therefore call on the government to closely monitor all entry points from the affected countries so as to prevent the spread of the disease. Thank you, Mohammed Ahmed Masur of Monrovia, Liberia, for your comment. And please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. 2 U.S. Peace Corps volunteers in Liberia have been isolated after potential exposure to Ebola, although neither one is showing symptoms of the deadly virus. A spokeswoman on Wednesday confirmed the two had contact with an individual who later died of the Ebola virus. The person said they will return to the United States when they receive medical clearance. Meanwhile, as a precautionary measure, the U.S. Peace Corps will temporarily remove all of its other volunteers from Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea. The agency made the announcement Wednesday, citing the spread of the Ebola virus. And Guinean President Alpha Conde has declared a week of mourning after a stampede at a rap concert left at least 33 people dead. That's it for this Thursday, July 31st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Tracy Carter, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Mark Ouman, I'm James Barty in Washington, hoping that you make this Thursday a very peaceful one.
In Focus from the Voice of America Television is a half-hour international news magazine with reports on Africa, the African diaspora and the world. It examines a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media, with correspondent reports on politics and diplomacy, news, pop culture, sports, health and the environment.
Check your local listings for In Focus on VOA TV.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Please join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 1700 hours UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas and enlighten us all on the topic at hand. So please plan to be with us every Thursday at 1700 hours UTC on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America.